From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and number three on the FBI's most wanted list. And today, we're going to talk about Can You Believe It? Bigfoot, UFOs, Loch Ness Monster, all the rest. That's coming up in our second segment. And in our third segment, it's Celebrities Doing Good. But first, let's meet our Charlotte panel. He's a psychologist, an author, AspieCon founder, and Comic-Con panelist. He's author of the popular Max Gamer graphic novel and book chapters on the psychology of Star Wars and Walking Dead, among other things. It's Dr. Frank Gaskell. Hello, Frank.
Hi, Dave. I have big news.
What's your big news?
Do you know how much I like cough drops and I always eat cough drops?
Yes, I do.
Well, Halls has come out with a new kind of cough drop that's not a cough drop, and it has 100% of your daily vitamin intake. So I eat about 13 of them a day. And I'm not sick.
No, you're not sick. You're very well.
But do you get sick?
They're very fruity and tasty.
You're healthy and well.
I highly recommend it. Halls.
This is Frank's healthy eating plan, is Halls cough drops.
Yeah.
13 per day.
I feel like Frank should be our like live sponsorship reader. Like, you know, today's episode is sponsored by, you guessed it, Howard Stern.
Right.
Tommy John underwear.
Hey, don't knock it, man. Tommy John's the deal. Also, the Third Love bra is pretty cool, too.
What? Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's apparently a bra that you don't want to take off even when you get home because you forget you're wearing it.
Because you're a man and you know a lot about bras.
Have you seen his weight gain?
Oh, my.
Hey, now.
Okay. I don't want to move shame you.
Jeez.
All right. Also, Dr. Emma Kate Wright is here. She has a PhD in psychology. She's a contributor to ShrinkTank.com. She's a panelist for HeroesCon. She's an all-around good egg. Hello, Dr. Emma Kate.
Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Good. Things going well for you?
Yes. Recently, I have been highly entertained by, I have a 14-year-old Westie who is basically blind at this point. And she's running into things, and I feel like a terrible human, but it's absolutely hysterical seeing her run directly into a tree. Just a giant tree. It was hilarious.
That's your humor, huh?
I know. It was so sad.
Being blind and disabled.
I'm the one that's messed up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Animal cruelty. It's fun. All right.
Well.
But you love her.
She's a sweet little one. Little
she's
pumpkin.
So sweet. All right. Hey, speaking of dogs, you know how I have that thing that like some people have with babies that their brains light up when they see a baby. They have to hold the baby. And I don't really care about the baby. But when I see a dog, it's like that.
Yeah.
Well, beside me on the plane flying back from Charlotte to Nashville, there was a long-haired dachshund in the chair right beside me.
Ooh.
And I got to like love on it and pet it and all this stuff for the whole flight. And I didn't even talk to the person on my other side the entire flight. And as we landed, I started talking to her and I realized that she is the daughter-in-law of my best friend. So I totally missed
the dog.
Yeah, the dog.
You're a disaster.
Yeah.
I'm a disaster. All right. Well, finally, Jonathan Hederle's here. He's a licensed professional counselor. He's an expert on substance abuse treatment. He's a certified Asian. He's written book chapters on the psychology of Game of Thrones, Star Wars, Walking Dead, and other things. He served as a panelist for HeroesCon, Wizard World Con. And each week, Jonathan rounds up two great stories of psychology in the news for our first segment that we call Being Human.
So there is a chilling study that shows how hostile college students have become towards free speech. So a fifth of undergrad students now say it's acceptable to use physical force to silence a speaker who makes offensive and hurtful statements. This is just one finding out of a new survey coming out of UCLA. The survey suggests that there is a fundamental lack of understanding of what the First Amendment actually entails, or young people are outright dismissing the amendment altogether. When students were asked whether the First Amendment protects hate speech, 4 in 10 said no. Ugh. And what's more, colleges alone are not to blame for these findings. There's other data that suggests that freshmen are arriving on campus with more intolerant attitudes towards free speech than their predecessors did, and that Americans of all ages have become strikingly hostile towards basic civil and political liberties. So, Emma Kate, tell us what you think of these findings.
Well, I think it's really dangerous in a democracy if you try to limit free speech in any way. And I've said this before, but I really like being offended. And it's important to realize, though, that
I do. You look in the mirror every day?
Yes, I'm offended by my face. No. But it's important to realize that there is this mentality that it's not okay to feel offended. But, you know, so it's okay for us to not be offended, but if somebody is offended, that's not okay. And so, you know, there's an interesting researcher from the University of Kansas. His name is Chris Crandall. He studies prejudice. And in 2016, he did a study that looked at when people were more likely to use this argument of free speech. And typically, and I can't recall all the details of the study, but typically that argument is pulled up when there's a racist undertone. So people don't use this argument, oh, well, we support free speech if you're being aggressive or the speech is overly negative. But if there's some sort of racist undertone, then we're more likely to say, oh, well, that's free speech. They can say what they want. And so it's typically people who share some racist tendencies kind of aligning with that, or at least that's what this research said. And so all in all, you know, we need to basically try to realize that, you know, if we're going to be aggressive about free speech, that's not okay.
I think we're seeing some of the consequences, especially at college and even in education, early education, high school education, of the absence of liberal studies and critical thinking. There is this weird dynamic where there seems to be these undertones of there's this absolute right and absolute wrong when it comes to conversation and dialogue, versus people can have strong disagreements of perspective, and that you can engage and respectfully talk about that and leave a conversation holding different outlooks and beliefs. I mean, that was basically the fundamental, you know, approach to my education growing up in my college experience. And I just it blows my mind that young people are going to college and they're not getting that experience.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we really do need to be listening and learning about why people are being offended. But if we're going to sit there and try and use force and violence to stop people from having conversations, then that's going to defeat the entire purpose.
Well, I could go off on this for like a half hour, but I will tell you this, that it represents to me the polarization of our culture and our country, in that there is this rise of, on the right, this very extreme right-wing thing happening, and yet the part that we're not talking about as much is the same thing on the left, in that I don't think the extreme right wing, that alt-right, really represents good conservative thought. It doesn't. In the same way, this rise on college campuses of hostility to free speech and toward, you know, kind of a commitment to politically correct speech is not true liberalism. It's not that we've kind of gone past them on the continuum, and so you're seeing these extremes become more dominant rather than just fringe. The university was really founded on this idea. Peter Abelard founded the idea on what he called disputations, that people get together and they represent, here's a perspective, here's another perspective, and we keep pushing back until we get to a place where we've arrived at truth. And that's largely missing in that on the college, in the university campus, it's very much like you must think a certain way, you must not talk about these things. And that's a very real thing. It's not exaggerated. There's lots and lots of evidence that that's happening. So it's a big deal.
All right, moving on. Men troll on Facebook more than women because of narcissism. At least that's what a new study suggests. Now, prior research has found men are more likely to engage in bullying on Facebook and online trolling in general. And studies have also found higher levels of narcissism in men. But this new research believes that it confirms a link between the behavior and the trait. So the study also concludes that overall men are more motivated to use Facebook antisocially, and this can be explained in part by greater narcissism. So Frank, as our social media addict and our resident troll and our resident narcissist, you're not a narcissist, don't worry. What do you make of this finding?
Well, let me first say, in this article, they listed a psychologist's guide to spotting a Facebook narcissist. More likely to post self-promoting content, that's me. More likely to post frequent status updates, me. The more they post, the less likely they are to receive validation, me. They tend to seek more social support than they're willing to give back, maybe me. They get angry when social contacts do not comment or content on content. They retaliate against negative comments, and they're more likely to engage in Facebook bullying. So, yeah, I'm not narcissistic.
I just play one on TV.
But it's just for me. I was reading through this, and the way I use Facebook is as a journal of my life. But this article is basically picking up, I think, on these gender differences of women tend to come together and socialize and support one another. And men are encouraged to be independent, to stand out, to get attention, bravado. And social media is just magnifying it. So I kind of do buy this article.
I mean, I think, I don't know about the findings, but it's pretty clear that at least with what we define as trolling, that's heavily, heavily represented in men and their online activity versus females. I don't know if I completely buy the narcissistic component, but I'm sure it contributes.
Yeah, and I mean, I would agree with it as well to a certain extent. And I definitely agree with the fact that Frank is a troll.
I live under a bridge.
Or at least,
funny.
At least that's how we would describe his face.
Right.
Yes.
And with that, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about our trending topic, which we're going to call Can You Believe It? This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Good psychology can change your life. At PsychBytes, we feature articles and videos with practical psychology that you can use every day. PsychBytes is a new psychology website with free articles and videos from dozens of the best psychology experts. Check it out on psychbytes.com.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, along with Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, Emma Kate Wright in Charlotte. And our trending topic today is, can you believe it? And we started talking about this amongst ourselves when there was a story about Bigfoot spray. Frank, do you remember this?
Yes. I want some Bigfoot spray. I believe it's $9.
That's his deodorant now.
And it was invented here in North Carolina. And the lady was asked, how do you know Bigfoot spray worked? And her answer was, how do you know it doesn't work? And it made me a believer.
So I'm going to go around and ask you all. So there's things like Bigfoot, UFOs, Loch Ness Monster, ghosts. Rather than ask whether you believe it or don't believe it, I'm going to ask you, what percent chance do you think that such a thing exists? So let's start with Bigfoot. What percent chance do you think that Bigfoot or whatever we're going to call the whatever this is, Bigfoot thing is, exists? Emma Kate, give us 0 to 100%.
I'd say there's probably a 90% chance there's some like weird animal out there. Yeah, I'm serious. There's probably some weird animal out there that like we just don't know what it is, and like weird species of things, and we're like, oh, it's Bigfoot, but it's probably just some weird animal.
Like what?
I don't know. It's people are like get all excited and hyped up and.
But like what animal could it be?
I don't know. It's like a bear that they mistake as like an exceptionally large bear.
People are mistaking a bear for Bigfoot. Okay. Yeah, that's great. Maybe it's a giant badger.
Man, we hit jackpot right out of the gate. Okay, Frank, how about you? 0 to 100%.
0%.
Oh man.
Absolutely 0%.
Okay. And Jonathan.
I would say 10%.
All right. You guys are idiots.
Yeah, I'm going to be at 10% myself. Okay, wow. We'll come back to that. So our spread here is 0 to 90% chance of Bigfoot existing. All right. Let's start backwards and UFOs, and we're going to define them not as something just identified in the air, but an actual alien spacecraft. Like there's an alien spacecraft that's come close to the Earth or to a space station of ours, something like that. Jonathan, what are the chances?
I go 51%.
Okay.
Frank?
100%.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
100%?
Yeah, 100%.
Not even 99, not 99%.
No, 100%.
Okay, we'll come back to that.
I'm more like a 70 on this one.
So you're more likely to see Bigfoot than an alien. Okay, all right. That's great. Okay, sure.
Well, I think I'm going to be in the 65%. All right. About two-thirds.
Okay.
All right. How about Loch Ness Monster? I'll start and I will say something that is, I don't know if how we would define it, but something is in the Loch Ness that is like a monster-y, dinosaur-y thing. I'm going to give it a 40% chance. Emma Kate.
See, I guess I got excited with the Bigfoot thing because I think that's like the same rationale. Like
now that I'm thinking
it could
about
be,
it.
No, but I'm saying it could just be this like creature that we haven't identified yet. And so I would go, it's probably dead now because it's supposed to be ancient, but I'm going to say 60% on that one.
Okay. I'm 100%.
Man.
I am 99%. I won't do 100 because I don't want to be like Frank, but.
Yeah.
Of all three, that's the one I'm most convinced is real.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. What are the chances that there are ghosts? Jonathan.
49%.
30%.
100%.
Oh, man.
Not just cat ghosts. That doesn't count.
Nope. Ghosts are real.
Man, 40%. All right.
Yeah.
So now let's unpack this, as it were. So we had at least one thing that was like ranged from 10 to 90 and a couple other 100 percenters. So what do you make of all that? Like, what do you make of this idea? Like, we're all like, you know, fairly educated folk, and yet we have a good range of disagreement on this. What do you make of that spread there?
Well, I just base it on the evidence, like what I see online. But
you know, the evidence.
Emma Kate bases it on like some weird feeling she has. There's no data behind it.
Yeah.
So I've seen a UFO. I think they're real.
You have seen a UFO.
Yeah, so's Dave.
So
Dave,
you can say you have seen a UFO, but if I say I have seen a ghost, that's crazy?
Yes.
Okay.
And also...
All right, there it is.
And also, Apple Maps caught a picture of Loch Ness Monster from satellite.
Edited.
It's real.
Edited.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Mm-mm.
So I base it on the data and probability. And all those Yeti pictures are fakes.
So, Frank, just to stay with you for a second, 100% chance of UFOs, 100% chance of Loch Ness Monster. I mean, if it was 100%, wouldn't we have, like, here's a good HD picture of one of these things? Like, here's something pretty unmistakable.
Well, first off, Loch Ness was first talked about, I believe, in the early 1800s when they didn't have cameras and stuff. And they've been talking about it since 500 BC. So there's something going on there. Why to take a picture? I don't know. It's really shy. But pictures, you can watch the International Space Station and you can see UFOs around the space station. And it's interesting that NASA cut the video feed when a UFO showed up on its camera. So... yeah, I've seen it with my eyeballs, so therefore it's real.
My eyeballs.
But if Emma Kate sees a ghost with her eyeballs, it's not real.
Right.
Show me a picture.
Okay, there's lots of photos of orbs and other things that
orbs.
Everyone can say.
Those are phosphorus gases from swamps there, genius.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Not yeah. real. They're balls of electricity. Nope. They're in the mountains. I know.
Nope. I've seen it with my eyes.
I believe in electric balls.
Then where's the picture? Where's a high-def picture of a ghost? If we got all these phones, where's the high-def picture?
There are photos that they have identified
Photoshop.
As not having been manipulated.
Photoshop.
Just saying.
Not real.
Just saying. Dave, meanwhile, is like sitting over here shaking his head at both of us as we're like arguing back and forth over this.
Dave, did you see a UFO?
I did, but I don't know that that means that it was an alien spacecraft. But I did see a metallic, at least had a metallic underside, fly above Interstate 85, and it wasn't a plane. So I did see that. And it sort of, it flew at an unnaturally fast speed and had a weird color around it. So that's for sure true.
Now, and you know,
I don't know what that was. It could have been a meteorite. I mean, you know, because they hit the surface of the atmosphere and they turn green and all that kind of stuff. So who knows?
And I'll also tell you this. You know why we're seeing UFOs since the 1950s?
Why?
Why?
Because that's when we got the power to harness the atom. We split that atom, the hydrogen bomb goes off. Aliens are like, whoa, uh-oh, we got to check this out. And that's...
And that is science.
That's when the aliens landed in Roswell and they kept them alive for a few weeks.
Do aliens speak English? Like, did you hear that?
I'm telling you, man, they felt that radioactive shockwave and said, we got to go check that out. They could mess us up.
I felt human vibrations.
So they're so far advanced that they can do these intergalactic space travel things.
It's a tesseract.
But then they're so... Then they're so like fragile that we can easily like when they crash land and then we keep them alive. You know, like they have no backup systems, nothing for them.
Yeah, let me help you out with that. The more advanced humans have become, the more fragile we have become because we are surrounding ourselves with technology. So these creatures are relying on technology to keep them safe, and they're very fragile on the inside. Like little babies.
Frank is definitely disproving the humans have evolved and are becoming more advanced. But
no, they're more advanced. They're just more fragile.
You do meet the fragile.
Okay. Would you rather fight a caveman or a modern man?
Spoken like a very advanced man asking that
there
question.
You go. You don't fight a caveman because they're not as fragile as we are.
Frank, you'd get your butt kicked by either.
Well, right.
You'd pay him off.
So before we devolve into caveman fighting conversation, Jonathan, what's your take on this whole thing about what we believe and why?
I just think it's an interesting exercise in how we spin something that most likely the things that we have mentioned here is a combination of data, probability, but also what we want to believe to be true. So, I mean, to me, it makes complete sense why Frank said 100% on the ones that he did and why he voted very low on like ghosts or Bigfoot. It's because of what he wants to believe. So we all have an element of bias going into this. I mean, I'll
Bigfoot
admit it for myself.
Be real. I'd like that'd be awesome if Bigfoot was real.
Yeah, but I think you're also partly wanting just to get under Emma Kate's skin just as much as believing it's not true.
I mean,
success.
Maybe.
Success. Hashtag you win.
Is that part of it, though, that we have our own biases that sometimes we're not even aware of, that, you know, somebody's more likely to believe one of these tales of folklore than someone else just because of their own bias? And it doesn't really matter what the facts are. Like the threshold for facts for one person is really low and for another person is really high, but it's really their own bias about it. Is that it?
I think that could absolutely be the case. I mean, when you think about spirituality and how that would impact ghost and your belief in that, I mean, for me, I don't really talk about faith, but it's one of those things where I do believe that there's a spiritual world kind of around us, and that's my own personal belief. And so because of that, then that shapes my perception of things. And then I've had certain experiences that would make me feel more strongly about it. So...
And just so our audience knows, she's saying all of that out loud wearing her Hogwarts jacket. Okay,
it's true.
So I'm just saying.
It's fine.
All right, take that with a grain of salt.
Well,
it feels like this whole thing we're talking about, we started with something kind of stupid with the Bigfoot spray, but it does feel like we're tapping into something that's probably pretty important, especially in our culture. And that is what we've seen culturally is that people will believe or not believe things based on their own sort of predispositions or how they're wired to see the world. Is there any way around that? Like, is there any way when you see someone who's so dug into a position, and I'm not even talking about on the right or on the left, I'm just saying whatever, to have any kind of meaningful impact in that or dialogue about that?
I think you have to. I think it may feel futile in the moment, but the more we close off dissenting or opposing dialogue, the more we're just reinforcing that, that they don't have any type of other perspective or angle to be introduced to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's definitely the case. Like, a lot of people who claim to have seen ghosts really are having sleep paralysis or the hypnopompic hallucinations,
yep,
those sorts
those
of things.
Hippo hallucinations.
Yes, hippo, hippopotamus in the room.
I hate those hippos that are pompous.
So rude.
The pompous hippos. Yeah, well, it's interesting stuff. Well, we should put up a poll on Shrink Tank and see what mm-hmm. people believe, and we'll follow up with that a little bit later. That'd be kind of cool. All right, we're going to take one last break when we come back. It's our final discussion, and this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hero House Publishing is pleased to announce Heroic Inspirations by Michael Kreitzer. Over the ages, superheroes in various forms have been speaking to humanity in togas, robes, and now tights and capes. They speak to us about the human condition. They help us work through our fears and failures. Heroic Inspirations draws out rich lessons superheroes provide for our daily lives. How does Superman teach us to deal with difficult people? What do the X-Men tell us about balancing individual and communal identities? Superheroes speak to these and many other life questions. Michael Kreitzer has been researching and teaching on superheroes for over 10 years, and now his book, Heroic Inspirations, is available to you at herohousepublishing.com or amazon.com. Order your copy today.
Back again on the Shrink Tank Podcast with Dave Verhagen, Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, and Emma Kate Wright, and we wrap this all up with our final discussion. And from time to time, we like to talk about celebrities who are doing good. And there's been lots of opportunity with all the natural disasters going on, with multiple hurricanes, with earthquake, with some other bad things going on in the world, with celebrities who have been doing some great things. Think of J.J. Watt, Taylor Swift, Leonardo DiCaprio, and others. Anybody in particular standing out for you lately that you, has really caught your attention, that has stepped up with one of these events and really either donated or gone out and rolled up their sleeves and done the work? Emma Kate, how about you?
Yeah, one person that I've seen a lot with a lot of the news coverage is Kristen Bell. She's known for Frozen, especially. She has been singing to people in shelters, performing songs from Frozen. She's been helping out. Josh Gad was a co-star of her, I believe, who played the little snowman in Frozen. His family was stranded in Harvey. She helped get them into a hotel. And just kind of all around, it seems like she has been very active in trying to help that community recover.
Frank, anybody for you?
Yeah, actually it's Greg Olsen, who plays tight end for the Carolina Panthers. He had
and broke
twins.
His foot.
Yeah, he broke his foot out for 8 weeks. But he had twins, little surprise twins, and one was healthy and one had a congenital heart defect. And it is called the hypoplastic left heart syndrome, and they created a foundation called the Heartist Yard, where these kids are taken care of at Levine Children's Hospital to no expense of the family, and provided more extensive care to support and extend their lives. And he actually won the Walter Payton Challenge last year in terms of having the most retweets and raising $25,000, which he matched dollar for dollar. And he's preaching what's important to him, but he's very consistent with it.
Jonathan.
with the recent hurricanes, Tim Duncan, who former NBA superstar, tends to stay out of the spotlight, but he was born and raised in the Virgin Islands, and so he's really been a strong proponent of raising disaster relief for some of the countries that got hit hard by the hurricane that aren't inland United States. And so I think that that's important, that we don't lose sight of a number of the other countries, oftentimes several of them very impoverished, that could easily get overlooked in relief efforts for Houston and other places on the mainland. So really want to give him a shout out.
And I know Kevin Hart's done a lot, Dwayne Johnson lately. Beyonce, who's a Houston native, has really helped coordinate some on-the-ground efforts in Houston. The person I want to give a shout-out to is Sandra Bullock. And did you know that Sandra Bullock has donated $5 million to the American Red Cross since 2001? And she's given $1 million in this most recent hurricane relief effort. So, and she does it without a lot of fanfare and pretty consistently. So we want to make sure that we're focusing on some of the good things that, that famous people are doing. There's still, you know, we're out a few weeks from some of the initial disasters, but there's still a lot of need. So if you're interested in donating, please go to the American Red Cross. You can also text to donate. There's a couple other organizations, one that's called All Hands and the other called Team Rubicon, that people that are charity watchdogs have given them high ratings. So those are worth checking out as well and be worth some ongoing donations to keep the efforts alive there. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for articles and videos and all kinds of good things about popular culture. Make sure you check out shrinktank.com. Also, follow us on Twitter @shrink_tank and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our producer and theme music composer is Sean Beck. In the Queen City, it's Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Please tell all your friends about us and make it a good week.
Okay.